exciting.
Welcome back to another episode of PDGA Radio. Now, believe it or not, in the month of May. Grant Zellner, along with a exhausted but resilient Jennifer Allen, fresh off of back-to-back-to-back four-round weekends, played in three states, two time zones, first in the wooded hillsides of Georgia, then on the slightly more open, but maybe slightly even hillier.
Yeah.
Sort of. I don't know if that's considered the Ozark portion of Arkansas, but whatever it is, it's got some up and down to it there in Jonesboro. And then you went up to Emporia at the Dynamic Disc Open and just got yourself blown and battered for three of the 4 days, really.
Pretty much.
That was just crazy to watch.
And according to my Fitbit, that also has quite a bit of elevation change.
But oh, really?
Yes, yeah, I was kind of surprised. But yes, sorry for the little bit of a hoarse throat here. one of the reasons I moved away from Oklahoma, our allergies are god awful there.
Yep.
And if you watched on coverage or you were there, any disc that hit a tree, just the pollen smoke bombs were unreal. So definitely all the wind really, really stirred up my allergies. And I am glad I safely, just a few hours ago, literally maybe two, made it back to Arizona. So hopefully my allergies will kind of get back and I will rest today before I head to California tomorrow.
Yeah. So let's talk just a little bit, though, about the experience of playing in particular in Emporia there at DDO, because of the fact that those courses very much so are a preview of Worlds, mainly because the Jones Supreme course is a brand new course. It had never had an Elite Series tournament. And I don't know that it's had many even top tier tournaments played on it, just because it hasn't existed in its completed form for very long. You know, what were your impressions of that course? You were on the ground, obviously. Many of us experienced it through the screen. So what were your impressions?
My impressions, since on Supreme, I did play it better the second day. The first day, I actually threw, I feel like, pretty well. I just never capitalized on any birdie putts. But I actually enjoyed playing it on Friday. Again, it was because I did successfully correct my mistakes. And so I believe that's why I personally walked away saying I liked the course, because I felt that success and accomplishment of fixing mistakes. And that's that's what gets us back and keeps us on the course, I think, is knowing, we all know, oh, I can do this shot, but doing it in a tournament, something different. And so I ended up really enjoying Jones and kind of knowing that, you know, we knew this wind was coming. I was pretty afraid of going over to Country Club because it is a lot more wide open. And so we might have been able to handle the wind better at Supreme. I don't know. I don't know. No course, I don't think, would have been easier to play in those winds. They were pretty brutal, and I've played in some really strong winds. Even this year, I've played two courses or two tournaments early in the year that were some really strong winds, Havasu being the worst, and it definitely felt that way. I didn't lay on the ground like I did at Lake Havasu at the top of the mountain to lay up a putt. It wasn't that windy, but it was a constant wind the entire time. And what made that so much worse was it was roped off every single hole. And even, you know, Saturday, I was kind of mad at myself because you kind of don't get mad while you're throwing these shots that are out of your control. I had multiple throws that I tried to correct after watching a card mate go, you know, the turnover a disc because of the wind. And so I would throw it straighter and aim at a different spot, and my disc would do something different. Mm-hmm. And so that was frustrating. Or, you know, as experienced players, we know a headwind putt will lift, a tailwind putt should suck it to the ground. And I had two jump putt layups that I was not trying to go for anything, and they did not drop. They lifted and, you know, sailed off in the 40 mm-hmm. mile per hour winds. And so it was frustrating that even with our knowledge of the game, it didn't really turn out in calculations when mm-hmm. when we let go of the disc there on Saturday. It was so windy. But on the flip side of that, you couldn't get mad, but you know, Sunday was a little more frustrating because the winds were calmer, but yet the discs were still, you know, I had just as many OBs on Sunday. So that was very frustrating mm-hmm. to me. I don't know, maybe the ground was a little more dried out with all the winds. I had some crazy skips from some awesome good shots. And mm-hmm. so a lot of OBs out there. The wind definitely made those a lot harder. So tough challenge for sure. Both courses are very challenging. Mm-hmm. And I think it was more of a challenge for the men mentally than the women. We're not used to getting birdies on every hole like these guys are. You know, they're used to shooting 12, 13, 14 under at every event. We're not as much as an FPO player used to that. And so I think for us, it kind of was a little normal. You know, we get really excited when we get pars sometimes. You know, a lot of the times, you know, par for women is great. And so I think it was a little more frustrating, I feel like, for the men. And they kind of got a little taste of what a hard course plays like for the women, because even the far distance throwers, they were all throwing a second shot on these holes. You know, they were no easy holes, and pars to them sometimes felt like birdie out there too. So it was interesting. Definitely not what they were used to.
It was wild being in the seat of a viewer for this week. You know, I've been at a number of events, albeit a number more events as the year goes on, but I wasn't physically at this one. So I'm watching through the screen and I'm watching pro players, yourself included, having to learn on the fly. I mean, you're having to experience first the Supreme Course for the first time. And it was interesting seeing the difference just between day one and day two on that course, regardless of the wind. And then even at the country club, having to attack it for most, not having been there for probably a year. Then the first day you have the country club, it's also a pretty windy day. So having to sort of get reacquainted with that track in difficult conditions, another sort of, I mean, you could almost see the wheels turning sometimes with different players.
Or us not trying to lose our mind. That might have been what you were seeing. We were trying to not go crazy.
Or seeing a player choose very strategically to play safe in a scenario when they never normally would
laying up 20 footers. You don't see that every day.
Yeah. Or I even heard one talking about how they elected, I can't remember which hole, I can't remember the player that mentioned this, but talking about how on a particular hole they were going to go for it. Because their rationale was, I feel almost as likely to potentially go out of bounds, whether I throw a power shot or try to finesse to this little landing area, especially given the wind. So I'm going to go for it because then at least I get the benefit of the distance before I cross over out of bounds.
Were you talking about hole 16 at Country Club, the island? Because that's a good plan.
But that's a good example.
Yeah, because you go for that island. And if you miss, you go to a 90-foot drop zone putt. Mm-hmm. And if you try to lay up to that area, it's a very difficult layup. Especially in a wind, you know, that mm-hmm. was throwing into kind of like a weird kind of angle head crosswind. And so you could easily hit and roll out of bounds then. And then if you rolled out of bounds there, you're maybe throwing from 120 feet with a tree in your way.
Yep.
So that was another one. It's kind of a smart play just to go for it unless, you know, the conditions were easier for a layup on Sunday. So a lot of strategic choices out there for sure on every hole.
Even when it wasn't the funnest to watch, I just invented a word, funnest. Even when it wasn't the most fun to watch, just because you hate seeing somebody struggle sometimes, it was very interesting all the way through. So, hey, thanks for being a part of that. That was cool to watch you, and congratulations on the top 10 finish. And sorry about the the impacts it has had on your sinuses.
No worries. Yeah. And I know they've already discussed that no event next year will be able to host a major event and a regular event.
They're not going
to
double up, basically.
I don't remember if I worded that correctly, but yeah, there's no more double dipping, I guess. Actually, I don't see how tournament directors do to major, major events like this. But as a player, that I'm so excited to go back. I think it was an awesome preview, a great practice. And I don't feel as stressed going to Worlds thinking, oh my gosh, I got to get like two rounds a day in. I want to learn this course. You know, we know the course. And so I think that's really cool that we got to practice both of these courses in a very, you know, big tournament atmosphere.
Pressure.
Just a few months before Worlds. So I thought it was pretty cool. I don't know if they'll go back to that again someday down the road, but as a player, it was a really cool experience.
Well, and given that one of the courses was so brand new, it seemed somewhat apropos. Most of the time when a venue is going to be hosting a major, it's going to be a familiar venue. It may be tweaked specially for the major. As a matter of fact, I don't know. I don't think any major changes of any kind are expected between now and Pro Worlds on either of the Emporia courses. But I don't think it would surprise anybody if a tweak here or a tweak there happened based on feedback or based on other circumstances that just couldn't be foreseen until, you know, players played.
And that's kind of probably difficult for them because, of course, you know, as Eric and I joked, you know, we expected at least maybe 6 to 8, a crazy, you know, amazing 10 under, maybe one round at these courses and trying to total 4 rounds at, you know, 30, 35 under. And Ricky finished at 10. So I don't think that they can base changes off of that. You know, those were just strictly weather reasons. And so I think that that's going to make it a little tougher for them to decide if changes really need to be made or not, because, you know, our scores and the difficulties that we had were mainly weather related.
Right.
A few OBs, you know, that maybe aren't as necessary, but maybe, I don't know. I think that's going to make their job a little harder.
Well, and as Eric already said on this very podcast, barely a week ago, major changes of any kind are not in the works, at least not that he foresees. I expect we're going to see 99, if not more, percent of exactly the same challenge, just different conditions. It'll be warmer. It theoretically may be less windy. You know, it remains to be seen, but it certainly is going to be fun. You know, on that note, though, we're talking about some big picture stuff here. And within the big picture view of disc golf at large, disc golf and the Pro Tour, we've got an interesting week here. We've got what some have characterized as an off week, and that's because it is for some players. It is for some producers of disc golf content. But that doesn't mean it truly is an off week in that there's not an event somewhere that's going to attract a field of pros that like to keep their game sharp, pros that live maybe nearby, and
pros that love courses that they don't ever want to miss.
I wonder who you're talking about. Well, of course, we're talking about the Challenge at Goat Hill, which might be an event that's not as familiar with all of our listeners, but it is an event that has a little bit of history. It's at a venue that's got a little bit of notoriety, and more than maybe both of those combined, we're talking about a tournament director that has a certain amount of weight in the disc golf community. Alan Risley, you may have heard of Alan's son, AJ Risley, who is a player right now. Alan Risley is the tournament director of the Challenge at Goat Hill. This is an event that has been several different levels of event in terms of it being an A tier or a silver series and whatnot. And this year it's coming at a very unique spot in the schedule. We thought a unique enough situation that merited a conversation. So stepping into the PDGA Radio virtual studio, none other than Alan Risley. so excited to welcome Alan Risley into the PDGA virtual studio. Jennifer and I are thrilled to have you today, Alan. And we also know how busy you are. You're getting to the point where you're counting the hours rather than the days as we close in on the challenge at Goat Hill. Yeah.
Yeah, we are definitely. The number of emails and texts and Facebook Messenger messages has exploded. So that tells me, yeah, we're within several days of the tournament. And I'm super excited to be here talking to you guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Alan, we're going to go under the assumption that we've got at least a handful of listeners and maybe more than that based on PDGA membership growth over the previous months that have perhaps heard your name, but don't really know you, don't really know who you are, the part of the country you hail from, don't even know how it is that you became involved in the sport of disc golf. So as broad a question as this is, would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Happy to do that, Grant. So I'm Alan Risley. I am PDGA number 1752.
Love it.
I kind of love it too. Yeah. It makes for great tie breaking in round two of a tournament.
Oh yeah.
I very rarely lose those ties. But I started playing disc sports back in the 1970s. I actually participated in some of the WAMO North American Series meet tournaments back in the 70s in Sarasota, Florida. I grew up in Florida. And my first disc golf true disc golf experience was at Rockledge Disc Golf Course in Rockledge, Florida. And I played while I was in high school and then college, all throughout Florida and the Southeast. I played as an MPO player, went to, Pro Worlds in 1983 in Huntsville, 84 in Rochester, and 85 in Tulsa. Fantastic experiences. And then early on, another thing that I got involved with, a couple of weeks ago at Jonesboro, they had Ted Smethers, who used to be the PDGA's executive director. They had Ted on during the press conference. And I asked Ted if I could help him with the Pro Tour back in 1983, 84. And Ted said, well, kid, I don't know you, and I don't want this thing to get screwed up. So I got a different project for you. And he handed over all this documentation of where Ed Hedrick had sold disc golf courses. And he said, see if you can organize this. And so I created the first PDGA course directory out of that stuff and the Pro Tour information that Ted had. And I self-published it in 1985. And ran it for a few years and then handed it over to Daryl Lynn and the PDGA once grad school really started kicking it for me. So that's like my early claim to fame is being the course directory guy. And then I took some years off, grad school, first job, kids. But then when my son, you may have heard of AJ Risley, he got interested in the basket that was in the backyard, and I started taking him to Morley Field, and then we went on these fantastic road trips that we called the Tour de Risby, and we traveled all around Southern California and the Southwest, and made some trips across the country, and I got back into tournament play, started running ice bowls, and was involved in starting up the San Diego Aces Disc Golf Club and SoCal. I didn't start SoCal Disc Golf, but I've been on their board for many years. And now I run this tournament at Goat Hill Park. This is our 10th tournament, the challenge at Goat Hill Park.
For those that don't know, Goat Hill Park is in Oceanside, California, correct?
That is correct. Oceanside, California. You can see the ocean. You can see the Pacific Ocean from the seventh hole. At Goat Hill Park, and it's just a super cool property. It's a very, very popular golf course, but it has disc golf baskets there that are open for play 4 days a week, and we take over the course this weekend. We kick all the ball golfers off and just have a ton of fun.
For our listeners who have never seen it, I will testify that this is probably one of my most favorite courses. And not because it's absolutely beautiful, but the huge elevation changes It reminded me the first time I played it of Australia, except for Australia was totally dead and Oceanside is really green. But there's these huge rolling hills, huge eucalyptus trees, and you can just smell the ocean air. And if you have a good or bad round, 2 miles down the road after you've put in that last putt, you can just forget about it.
Yeah, you can go throw yourself in the waves. After your round. But yeah, Jennifer's absolutely right. The elevation changes at Goat Hill are one of the big things. I always tell people, if you're going to walk the course when you play, it's going to be probably 14,000 steps on your Fitbit and 60 to 70 floors climbed.
Wow.
So it is a workout. But just a ton of fun.
And the challenge has been around for roughly a decade.
Correct.
Give or take.
Yeah, there were a couple of years where the course was under renovation when it changed management. They closed the course down for a couple of years to install recycled water for irrigation. And so we didn't have the tournament for 2 years. But so this is the 10th challenge at Goat Hill Park this year.
And the changes that they made to the course are absolutely beautiful. Even though we don't even really use their driving range, just the the whole feel of the tournament is really nice because they've added so much money to that golf course.
Yeah, it's not many driving ranges that you find that have gongs on them.
Yeah, it's a unique experience.
Yeah, I was out there with a couple of buddies a few weeks ago, and we had a bucket of balls and a 6-iron, and we were just pitching at the gongs, hitting the gongs. It was just a ton of fun.
As you do. Looking back, some of the winners that have played this event, there are a few that maybe some listeners won't be as familiar with as other listeners might be. People like Kyle Ekman, Bobby Music, for example, Steve Rico, maybe a few more have heard of. It looks like
Thomas Gilbert.
Who else? Thomas Gilbert has won. Seppo Paiu.
Yep.
Has won, for those that didn't know if he'd ever won in the States. Absolutely, that's the case. And I'm seeing a name here that looks a little familiar. Jennifer Allen.
Yes.
Has taken down the challenge at Goat Hill.
Yes, she has. Yes, she
probably
has.
One of my bigger wins, I think. That was a pretty good year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you played really well that year.
I did. And then Owen and Lisa have both also walked away with some big wins there. I don't know, female-wise, previously before moving there. But
yeah,
some awesome people for sure.
Owen Scoggins looks like, let's see, got out to a 2-throw lead and the two married each other. Owen Scoggins won in 2020. Did she also win in 2021?
No, Lisa. That was Lisa. Lisa last year.
That was Lisa. There it is. I read it backwards. Yeah. That's right. Lisa won in 2021. Also Anthony Barella in 2020 and Ricky Wysocki in 2021. Who are some of the names that'll be down there this weekend, Alan?
Well, we're going to have Anthony Barella will be back, even though he's not the defending champion. He was a champion year before. Drew Gibson. Yep, Drew Gibson will be there.
Bradley Williams.
Jordan Castro, who I was messaging with earlier today. Chris Clemens, Eric Oakley. Bobby Music will be a defending champion. I think Philo's going to be here. I'm not absolutely sure.
Dropped from last week. I was curious if he would.
Yeah. Philo loves the goat. He usually does commentary with Ian. We will have Central Coast out shooting video of MPO. So
good to know.
Yeah. He may show up, at least to do the commentary. Yeah.
Okay. So some post-produced rounds then for everybody to know about. Great.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And, I think Ian's coming out. Ian might be out today shooting a drone video.
Nice.
Yeah.
A few changes to the course this year. I was already kind of peeking at the caddy book. It looks like a couple of basket changes that otherwise, you know, pretty similar course.
Yeah, pretty similar course. But we looked at the statistics from UDisc from last year, and holes 14, 15, and 16 were playing a little soft. So we moved those baskets to new locations, and we've changed what had been a lot of out of bounds locations to hazard.
I saw that.
Yeah. So players have got to keep it in the fairway. Otherwise, they on some spots they'll be taking a stroke and throwing from some kind of tricky spots.
Interesting.
Was there a reason of doing the hazard versus OB like in the years past?
Part of it is that we felt that some of the locations, like especially hole 16's got some drop offs to the side where I just really want to penalize players that go off the side there.
Right.
Excuse me.
As we should.
Yeah. He said while twirling his mustache.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so we wanted to make those a little bit tougher. And then also from a tournament management standpoint, if I don't have OB there, I don't have to necessarily have a spotter to mark where you cross the line. So it makes it easier for me to manage the staff.
That's kind of brilliant.
Smart.
Yeah.
Hey. So this might be a good place. Well, first of all, yeah, that's smart. Second of all, this might be a good place to segue just a little bit, because listeners will notice we didn't name just, you know, nearly the list of nationally touring pros that were, say, in Emporia last weekend or in Jonesboro the weekend before. You were talking before we came on the air today about sort of how the challenge at Goat Hill Park sort of slots in, what it has been in the past, what it is this year, and what you hope it will be. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think we can get a broader picture of a lot of how touring dates work with different venues.
Yeah. Yeah. So we picked this first weekend in May date, that puts us right after, Dynamic Discs Open, Glass Blown Open, hoping that we would catch players on their way out to Santa Cruz and Stockton. But the way things have worked out is it is such a long drive. It's a 20-hour drive, and I just did that drive myself earlier this year. Mm-hmm. 20-hour drive from Emporia, which is tough for players. And then also the way, with the addition of the Champions Cup and the Tallahassee tournament, the Pro Tour needed a week off. The staff needed a week off to catch their breath and to move all their assets, all that stuff that they put up has to go into a truck, and somebody has to drive it across the country in order to do the California swing. And so the conversation that we had with the Pro Tour was, hey, we just can't have you on the tour this year because we need this week to
recoup.
to kind of catch our breath and get ready for the next swing. So what we're planning on doing for next year is we're going to move our tournament to earlier in the year. We've had some conversations with the Pro Tour about that idea, and we haven't finalized anything with them yet, but we're hoping that by moving to January, February, we'll be able to get back on at least the Silver Series, if not the Elite Series, and be kind of a jumping off point before Vegas.
Would that be before wintertime as well?
Well, we're talking with the wintertime guys and folks in Orange County, you know, La Mirada, Huntington Beach. We'd kind of like to have a whole cluster of events early on, and possibly, maybe we could get the Pro Tour to bring the All-Star event to San Diego County.
I heard rumors they're talking Florida, which I was really excited to maybe come back one more time to Arizona, but we'll keep our fingers crossed it stays west.
Yeah. I think it could be pretty cool to have a series of events out in California before we go to Vegas. We definitely have a lot of energy here for that. And we had fantastic, the Wintertime Open and the Golden State Classic, which was played at La Mirada, were in the weeks right before, the Las Vegas Challenge, and they were fantastic events. And I think if we combined those with Goat Hill, we could really have a fantastic opening of the year for our pro players.
Maybe just not quite as warm as now, but it won't be too bad.
Yeah. We're sure as heck not going to be 30 degrees.
No,
it's always going to be pretty nice. And
but it is always a little windy off the ocean.
A little bit. But I played the Wintertime Open this year in shirt sleeves,
nice.
And shorts. So Yeah.
I'll take California any day. It's fine. I'll be right there, Alan.
Yeah. So, but Grant, you know, to the larger point, I mean, the putting together the tour and putting together the whole PDGA schedule is just, it's a massive undertaking. And there are lots of people who have dates that they have had traditionally, and they don't want to move from those dates. And that's kind of, you know, we were hoping that maybe somebody could move 1 week or, you know, 1 week forward or 1 week back to make some room for the travel to get to Oceanside. But it's just not going to happen. People like the dates that they have, and I totally understand that. So in order for us to try to move back up into that more prestigious level, we're willing to move our event to another date.
Sure.
To accommodate that.
I think I see some parallels in some other sports. For some reason, NASCAR just popped into my mind with the way that, you know, the venues are set, but the dates sometimes can be a little bit fluid. Some dates are sort of, some dates are sort of held in a certain amount of reverency where that event is always going to be on that, you know, second weekend of May or whatever. But there are also a number of events that are expected to have a little flexibility. And there are even some events that tend to sort of bounce up and down, for lack of, you know, better terminology, in terms of their quote unquote level, A tier, Silver Series, Elite Series, sort of up and down. And I think that's going to be the way of the future. And I think that could be really interesting because we'll have both consistency in the pro touring schedule and variety in the all within the same schedule. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. And if you look at, I mean, pro golf, there are a lot of interesting parallels between pro golf, ball golf, and disc golf. Mm-hmm. And it took the PGA Tour quite a few decades before they came up with their current slotting of tournaments, you know, where they've got the West Coast swing and the Florida swing and the Texas swing and things like that. And so, you know, we're still pretty young in terms of our elevation of the pro game. And I think it's, you know, it's just kind of natural that we're going to have some fluidity. And I can tell you that putting on a big event is really, it's a lot of work, and it can be taxing on your staff and your volunteers. And I'm sure there are some places where they are happily stepping back for a year and saying, you know, let us catch our breath. Let us, kind of reorganize our fundraising and stuff like that, because you can't go back to the well every single year sometimes.
Right. And to build up even a bigger purse, having 2 years to build that versus one is a fantastic idea.
Yep. Yep.
What are some of the ways that you are helping the players and the tournament raise money?
Yeah, thank you. So raising money, boy, I've gotten a ton of help from Innova Disc Golf. They involved Goat Hill in a fundraiser where we had some special release, LVC, Las Vegas Challenge, Nate Sexton Firebirds and Calvin Heimberg Destroyers. And we raised several thousand dollars off of the sale of those discs. I've also been selling Goat Hill fundraiser discs since December. And I've sold over 600 fundraiser discs
since then. Beautiful halos, all kinds of discs.
Yeah. So we've done a ton of that type of fundraising. Obviously the standard T-sign sales, and you know, we have a bunch of vendors coming out, and they're helping us with some money to rent out the vendor space. But then also some things that we're doing for the players, because, you know, being the father of a touring professional player, I had a lot of conversations with AJ about what is it that makes the job of touring difficult. And, you know, the first thing he said was finding a place to stay. And so one of the things that we have done here at Goat Hill is we are recruiting, we call them local hosts. And so we're finding people who have a room, you know, spare room, a couch to crash on, or a place to park your van or your RV, and making, you know, coordinating that and helping players find a place to stay for the week they come to, you know, come to Oceanside. And then another thing is, I'm not going to name the player, but at last year's event, one of the guys who was on the lead card in the final round, he finished his round and then he zoomed out to the parking lot, grabbed a table and a chair and a box of discs and set up a little shop to sell his discs. I don't want him to have to do that this year. So we're setting up a player sales tent where players can bring us their discs and their merch. We will inventory it with them, and then we'll sell their stuff for them during the tournament and then turn over all of the cash proceeds to them at the end so that they can spend their time practicing and playing and resting. And we'll, you know, we'll help them sell their stuff. Cause that's, you know, I mean,
that's huge. You know this, Jennifer,
I mean, the prize money that you guys get is just a piece and sometimes a small piece.
Maybe gas money.
Yeah. Yeah. Your real earnings are coming from that branded merchandise that's got your name on it that that your fans want to buy to help support you. And so we know that players are going to come to Goat Hill with a lot of that branded merchandise, and we're going to help them do their fundraising by selling stuff for them and turning over the proceeds to them. So, you know, those are the types of things that we're trying to do to be player centric. And I think those are things that other events, other TDs might think about doing. And I got one other thing that I really haven't talked to many people about, but I think players need health insurance.
Yeah.
And after
the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually have a guy who I've been talking to. He puts together group rate insurance plans, and we're going to make a presentation to folks who are decision makers and doers. And we'll see. I'm not going to put anybody on the spot, but we want to present an idea to some folks that could be the sponsors of a group insurance that would not cost the sponsoring organization a cent, but would make sure that players have health insurance that can follow them wherever they go across the country as they travel. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, whether it's a twisted ankle or, you know,
a heart attack.
Yes. A cut, yeah. A COVID test. Mm-hmm. The ability of a player to be able to go to an urgent care and get help and not have to worry about paying it out of their pocket fully. I think that's really important. I think it's something that is missing right now.
I think it's something that's been needed for years. I mean, yes, there's a lot of young players that may be still on their parents' health insurance. However, there's so many now that are not,
right,
and that this is their full-time job.
Yep.
So, you know, in the past, so many, you know, players back in the day, like Alan and I used to do, you work and you played. That's mm-hmm. not the case anymore. So, yeah. So many more players do not have health insurance. So I think that'll be a fantastic thing if that takes off.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see where it goes, but it's something that I'm pretty passionate about. Especially after seeing, you know, some of our players that have been knocked out of competition because of injury and possibly because they didn't get care as quickly as they should
previously.
Have.
Yeah. Or previously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is really interesting because, Alan, your name was brought up. I can't remember where. I don't remember if it's something I read or it may have been a conversation I was having with some people back at the Champions Cup. Just talking about individuals in the disc golf sort of universe that are known for having some ideas, known for having some really level-headed kind of thoughts that sort of see past like the knee jerk, you know, sometimes you hear, why doesn't the pro tour do this?
Yeah.
Or why doesn't the PGA do that? And, you know,
oh,
and
you've
your
seen
name
me
came
on
up
Twitter.
And already in the just the last 5 minutes alone, you've brought up this idea of this merch tent to help out touring pros and give them a centralized location that can handle sort of the grunt work of what has to be an important part of their income. Now you've brought up the idea of, you know, sooner or later, perhaps some type of a health insurance component to being a tour pro, or at least the option for a touring pro to be able to get on board with something like that. I'm just curious if any other just, you know, ideas floating around in that empty space over your head right now are something that you feel like grabbing out of that thin air and bringing up right now, because I've heard your name brought up with regard to course design. I've heard your name brought up with regard to a lot of different things.
We'd have to cut the roof off of his house to let it out.
Let all those ideas. There's so many floating around.
Too many.
Well, I have no shortage of opinions.
Maybe there's at least one that's been really on your mind for whatever reason over the last few weeks or something. And you're like, hey, I've got a chance to talk about
tea pads.
But that could be one. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, there've been a lot of
standardization.
Yeah. Well, I don't like the idea of standardized tea pads because I think it's totally impossible. Because we have different types of terrains
weather
and climates.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't have the same tee pad everywhere. I'm not going to ask, courses that are up in the mountains to somehow tote concrete up into the mountains to make concrete tee pads. Not everybody likes turf, and turf wears out, and turf needs to be maintained. So I think we can have some sane conversations about tee pads and recognize that there are multiple really good alternatives, whether it's concrete or artificial turf or pavers. But having some good description of how to install, how to maintain. And then I know that PDGA goes out and reviews courses before major events, and Pro Tour is, I think, doing a better job of this than they have in the past now that they're adding staff. But those are things that, you know, from the TD side, if you're going to come out and review my tee pads and say this tee pad's not up to par, you better give me time to make the changes. Don't tell me that 2 days before the event.
We definitely had a few issues at Jonesboro, but it was too late for them to fix any of those.
Yeah. And so, you know, those are conversations where you've got to have sane and logical people getting involved in how do we schedule these sorts of reviews so that they're done in a timely fashion so that we can make the changes. Because, man, if somebody shows me a problem with the course where I'm holding an event, I want to make it right. But you also have to give me enough lead time so that I can make those changes.
Maybe we need a website of how to properly install all of these or how to maintain, just for people who are working at a golf course or about to put in a golf course. Like, how thick do they need to brush that concrete down?
Right.
How much sand goes on top of the turf?
Yeah. Because, boy, You get to some courses and they have these beautiful concrete tee pads that are finished like
butter,
like glass, you know, where as soon as there's some moisture on them, you're going slipping and sliding.
Yeah. It's like a garage floor.
I will even flip that into the opposite, as they're brushed too deep.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you stick and you're going to have a sore knee by the time you're done. People tease me all the time. Why do you spin around? I just start, switch to a brand new pair of Terexes, and they have so much tread. And, you know, DDO's tee pads were brand new, and so they were very good tee pads, but my shoes were just sticking. So I spin around so I don't blow up my knee.
Yeah,
so right. Tee pads are very, very important for sure. It goes back to health insurance so we don't get hurt.
Right.
But it seems like the bigger picture is just the word quality. Like,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than thinking in terms of standardization, maybe the thing to think in terms of is just ensuring a certain measure of quality, whether it's talking about the surface and the makeup of a tee pad, or whether it's talking about, erosion control, particularly around the basket. That's an issue in the part of the country where I'm from. That's an issue on, I'll bet, well over 50% of the courses I play. Erosion problems are a natural part of the environment here. It's not necessarily disc golfers' fault or even the fault of people treading on that part of land. It's just going to happen because of the way our weather works.
Sure.
It's because we got 2 inches of rain this morning and you're going to get 2 more this afternoon.
Yeah, and then we're going to have a month later this year where there's not a drop of rain and there's triple degree. You know, it's the same thing as why roads are made of different materials and usually in different condition depending on what part of the country. It doesn't necessarily mean it's anybody's fault.
Right.
It just means they have unique challenges there they have to deal with ice and snow and then heat and then whatever. And that goes back, I think, to where this conversation started, just about the idea of standardization in and of itself is probably not the solution.
Yeah.
There are so many other factors.
Yeah. I got into a little back and forth on Twitter this past week about somebody said, you know, why aren't tee pads and baskets standardized like all other major professional sports have their stuff standardized? And I said, wait a second, Major League Baseball, have you seen,
no, they don't.
Have you seen Fenway Park? Have you seen the Green Monster? Have you seen the ivy on Wrigley Field's outdoor, outfield wall that changes as the season goes on? It's just bare sticks in the early spring, and then by the end of the season, it's lush ivy. Have you seen that little hill out in the Houston center field? No, they don't have standardization, but what they have is quality control. And they have review. Right.
Maintenance.
Yeah.
Major maintenance.
Yeah. So.
And it's not a broken wheel. Like, you know, especially like turf tee pads are kind of new, in the last 8 years, something like that. So now, you know, the ones who have figured this out, they have some good knowledge that they can pass along to new course designers or TDs. You know, same with concrete tee pads. You know, we figured it out. There's a lot of good ones out there. Pass that knowledge around.
And there are some disc golf designer groups on various social media platforms. I don't know if their conversations get out of those groups enough and out into the general disc golf population. I think Jennifer, what you said earlier about let's get this information out, I think if we had some, you know, maybe not absolute standards, but if we had some examples and discussion about how to make tee pads better.
Needs to be a link on PDGA.
Yep. I think that would be a great idea. I think it'd be a fantastic idea. Yeah. And standardizing baskets, man, you know what? I think it's okay if pros have to learn a little bit different way to putt for different baskets. That's part of the skill.
I've gotten a spit on every single basket that there's designed.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get a spit no matter.
Okay.
There are some better than others.
Yeah. So here's an old story. So this is kind of like Uncle Alan's story time.
We went from tee pads to insurance.
Yeah. So in 1983, I'm at Huntsville Worlds and I didn't make the semis. So I'm walking around the course with Ed Hedrick. And I ask him, so Ed, why did you make the basket the way you made the basket? And, you know, his story was that he and his son, Ken, they like to play catch. I mean, you know, he's whammo frisbee. That's Ed Hedrick. And they, you know, their big thing was playing catch, throwing back and forth. And the best thing you can do when you're playing catch with someone is to hit them right in the pit of the stomach, you know, right in the bread basket. That's the sweet spot. That was the sweet spot on the basket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is to hit that spot, which is the same as, you know, where you want to throw it when you're playing catch with somebody. Well, the other part about that is you don't want to hurt the person that you're playing catch with. So you don't want to throw it as hard as you can at their stomach. So the basket might not reward you if you putt so hard that you would hurt that person that you were playing catch with. You know, think about the basket as being your partner in a game of catch. And, you know, maybe that 40 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour putt, maybe that shouldn't stay in the basket. You know, just like if you're playing traditional golf or ball golf, you can't putt the ball super hard and have it fall into the cup. If you putt it really hard, it's going to roll right over that open hole. You have to have some touch. You have to have some feel. So, you know, Grant, you're asking, what other idea do I have floating around? Well, it's that the basket, you know, the basket, you know, think of the basket as your your catch partner, and you don't want to hurt that basket with your putt. You want the disc to be losing energy as it makes it to the chains and as it falls into the cage. You know what? If you putt super hard and it spits out the back, well, you know, you need to learn some touch.
Simmer down.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and to just reinforce that from the mind of a pro, and Jennifer, I bet you'll back this up. I was speaking with an MPO player in Jonesboro who talked about how professionals think about speed control on their putts and will acknowledge if they get a spit out, whether or not that was their fault for putting that particular putt with bad speed. And I thought that was interesting. Just the notion that a pro is so tuned into what it takes to truly throw a perfect putt that they may have a spit out and may acknowledge that it had something to do with themselves, not just with the basket. I thought that was,
I think some of them will. Yeah. I think some of them won't.
Go back too as advice. You know, you're talking about pro players, but that's a fantastic advice for amateurs and beginners, or even mm-hmm. children, Alan, of just what you said. We need to think that we're playing catch. You know, you want to increase your percentages on putting as a beginner and learn how to putt. It's a wonderful, not only is it going to stay with good speed, but mm-hmm. for aim, you know, we're playing catch.
Yeah, absolutely.
So great putting advice for beginners out there and children too.
I like it. Well, hey, that was a cool idea to pluck out of the air over your head. I like that a lot. I know there are more I know there are more floating around over there, but we've already taken up more than half an hour of your time during this busy week. So, I mean, is there anything else that we should cover before, Alan, we let you go with now, as we mentioned before, hours rather than days, it feels like, before this year's challenge?
I think that's most of it. You know, I'll just make a blatant plug for the tournament one more time.
Challenge. Go right ahead.
challenge@goathillpark.com. You can find out all sorts of information about the tournament. We do have spectator passes for sale up on Eventbrite for Saturday and Sunday.
Good point.
Yeah. And we have a ton of really cool Innova discs with that really fun Andrew Layton and Goat Hill stamp. Oh, and doggone it.
I was going to say, we totally forgot about
that. Yeah, stamp. Yeah. So
these stamps are so cute.
Yeah. So Andrew is a fantastic artist, caricature artist, and he's worked with a number of pro players on artwork for their disc designs and stuff. And what I did last year, and I did it again this year, is I got together with Andrew and some of our Innova players, and Andrew made artwork that combines the player with the goat, interacting with the goat somehow. And we have eight different designs. So it's the goat and an Innova player. We've printed those designs on White Star discs, and we're going to auction them off. We're going to do a silent auction this week of 10 discs for each player, and the money that we raise from the silent auction is split between the player and the tournament. I can't remember how much money I gave you last year, Jennifer, but I know it was at least several hundred dollars.
Yeah, it was a nice little mm-hmm. bonus, but besides that, it's just a cool thing. Like, I will probably be bidding on my own disc.
Well, you get a couple of them.
I know, but they're so cute. So yeah. For all the PDGA listeners out there, if there is an Innova player at this event that you love, definitely go look at these discs and try to track them down. And Alan, I'm sure you can give us the link to that.
Yep.
But this artwork is super cool and it's very unique, one of a kind. And so if you know that one of your favorite players is going to be there, you might want to check out this auction.
Yeah. And I'll just list them off. Jennifer Allen, obviously. Also on the FPO side, we have Lisa Ficus, Owen Scoggins, Maria Oliva, and Carissa Dedman, who's a SoCal new Innova player. And then on the MPO side, Philo Brathwaite with a special guest, Cade Filimahala, and Bradley Williams. And they're all really cool. I mean, I go through a process of talking with the players and asking them for ideas about, you know, what would you like to have in your artwork? And Jennifer says, well, my reach back is like my, you know, my signature. So can the goat be grabbing the disc while I'm reaching back? And of course. Oh, that's of course. Funny.
It's so cute.
Yeah.
Now is this artwork, can anyone see it yet? Or is it shown?
It is up on our Facebook page for the tournament. And
I think Instagram as well.
Yeah. Instagram.
On the website, the regular logo for the event is there on the disc with the goat.
You know what, Grant?
You know, with a disc in his mouth. That's great.
I will make a post on the blog part of the website as soon as we're off of here so that everybody can see those pictures. Yeah, I mean, you know, Bradley Williams wanted a cactus in his, so he's sitting up in a cactus with a goat. Lisa tours with Susie, her cat. So her cat is up on top of her head. Carissa likes to cradle her puppy, so she's cradling the goat. Cade has a Tongan background, and his uncle carves tikis. So we've got a tiki design on his.
They're all so unique. Yeah. Maria has her kind of like her tour series disc.
Yeah, the Medusa. Yeah.
The Medusa. And then Own is putting, which she's known for.
Yeah, and the goat is saying Own.
Yeah. Like, I can't remember, but I knew it was a putt. Yeah. They're all so cute.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's a fun thing that we did last year for the first time, and it went over really well. And I will continue to do that as long as Andrew wants to, and as long as I'm running the tournament.
Yeah, that's just another thing. So Alan's listed, you know, three things that he's doing just for the players. Mm-hmm. And so I'll even just say and kind of throw this out there. For the players who have never been, one, check out the course because it's absolutely beautiful. And two, this is just a unique experience. And Alan and his incredible big team that also helps him make it a little special with all these little things that they do every year for us as a player. Mm-hmm. And so as a player, it's a great event and it's a good vibe. There's always, you know, music, and there's a small little bar at the clubhouse, not bar. They don't even have a bar, but just drinks and music and a fire pit. And it's just a great vibe. And then for spectators as well, I mean, you get to see some incredible players throw some huge big shots, which everybody loves.
Oh, so. Yeah. Oh, and we're going to do a Saturday after Saturday's round after you guys finish. We're renting out the golf course. So we're going to have a party at the golf course after the FPO finishes their afternoon rounds. And we're going to do a distance showcase on the driving range.
I'll tell someone to bring some disc.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I should do that.
And
sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. So it's gonna be a ton of fun.
It is a great time. So you probably missed out this year, but definitely look for it in the future.
Yeah. There may be a way if there's some pro players who need something to do on their way to Santa Cruz, we may still be able to squeeze a few more players.
Squeak a couple.
Yeah.
Wink wink.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, Alan, thank you again for just giving us a little bit of your time during this busy week, and
my pleasure,
for the interesting conversation and also really the insights, because we've covered some details that, you know, haven't really come up thus far this year on the podcast that I think are interesting in terms of thinking outside the box and in terms of, you know, seeing the game and even the pro tour itself with a little bit of a bigger picture mentality. And I really like that. I think it's good food for thought.
All right. Well, happy to provide that food for your thought.
Always hungry for more of that. All right, Alan. Well, hey, best of luck when it comes to weather and other things like that. And we can't wait to see some of the coverage that'll be out on, as you said, Central Coast. So we'll be looking forward to that.
All right.
And we'll catch you on the flip side.
Thank you
very
much.
And I'll see you in a couple of days.
Yes.
Like
yes.
One.
See ya.
Alrighty.
Okay, that's gonna be a wrap for this week's PDGA Radio, so I can go rest this great voice of mine.
You sound fantastic, I'm just telling you.
I mean, this is one of those, it's like, maybe I should have done the TV versus the radio, because this is not a radio voice today.
Yeah, you could just sit there and smile, but then nobody would know you were sitting there the whole time and smiling. Back next week with another episode of PDGA Radio. Enjoy this weekend's off week for some, this weekend's challenge at Goat Hill Park for others, and we will catch you on the flip side. See ya.
Bye, everybody.